hopeful, regardless of the outcome. Boost the positive energy without one. Sorry about the jab, I'm on the holy field. I'm bearing fruit, but demons try to eat them like Yoshi meal. I piss them off the Batman like Falcone deals. Jungle full of predators, I know how Mowgli feels. So I got the fire, refuse to live in fear. I can spot suppliers, eating fresh roads. Call me private label, I'll be leaving.
Oh yeah, welcome to the Permaculture Pimp Cast, a bonus episode. And yeah, where PIMP stands for permaculture is my passion. Thanks everybody for tuning in. This is going to be an episode that really I've been looking to for a long time. And I'm on here with a guy whose podcast I've been listening to for quite some time. Wears many hats, does a whole lot of things, and we're going to get in a lot of it today. But first, let me tell you, this episode is brought to you by Hickory Ridge Soap from twooldcrowshomestead.com. Turn that simp into a pimp. Bam. Also, Heaven's Harvest, y'all, 10% off with promo code PERMA, P-E-R-M-A. All those seeds out there right now are balling. I mean, from the bottom to the top, y'all, 100%. It's batting 1,000. All of your preparedness needs, get it over there at Heaven's Harvest. Also, EMP Shield, $50 off with promo code PERMA. And let's not forget Harvest Right freeze dryers. Took care of all that stuff right from the beginning because I don't want to mess around. I want to get straight into it. All right. So everybody knows that we cover permaculture, preparedness, and practical living right here on the Permaculture Pimp Cast. But from time to time, we bring in some different flavors and some things maybe you haven't heard of before. This one is going to be special in a whole lot of different ways because we have the one and only Tony Merkel from the Confessionals podcast. How you doing, Tony?
I'm great. I've been waiting all my life for this.
Well, who was it, man? I mean, you're an honorary pimp today, man. In fact, I think you've been one for a while because permaculture, as I understand it, is starting to become your passion as well.
Oh, huge, huge. I have my in-laws are in town this week, and they saw the transition from Tennessee Tony, or from Philadelphia Tony, Philly Tony, to Tennessee Tony. I was up in Philadelphia about a little more than a year ago, living in that area my whole life, and moved down here. And my whole goal was to give a crack at this homesteading thing. And shortly after we moved here, William emailed us. And I remember in the email, he said he was introducing himself and he goes, me and my family, we have a YouTube channel. And he said something about my dad being black. I'm like, wait a second. I have only ever seen one black homesteader on YouTube. And I was like, I watched this guy. And so I was like, oh, that's cool, man. And then we got connected.
How cool is that, man? Folks, you're going to be glad you tuned into this one. We're probably going to get Tony. I'm not going to do any stuff that you don't already know about, but there's a lot of debates that go on in this house regarding a lot of things. And we're going to get into that first, but every superhero has an origin story. So look, folks, believe it or not, Tony and I kind of grew up in the same place. I moved away. And then here we are years later, kind of like me and Jack Spearco. We started all in Pennsylvania, it seems. And all of us, to some extent or another, have basically migrated elsewhere. So tell us a little bit about Tony and a little bit of your background and maybe about what you currently do.
All right. Before I get into that, what part of Pennsylvania were you from?
Well, right outside of Philly. Don't hold it against me, but it's Coatesville and then Lancaster.
Okay. Yeah.
We live in Coatesville and Lancaster, which you're one of the few people that would understand that we pronounce it Lancaster, not Lancaster, as everybody else calls it. I just did a butchery, man, with a guy a little while ago. You ain't going to believe this, bro. He brought down scrapple and shoe fly pie. And you're one of the few people in the world that would know what those things are.
Yeah. We moved from Pottstown. So we were a little north of Coatesville. So, very familiar with Coatesville. I used to drive tractor trailer through Coatesville every day.
Sorry, bro.
Yeah. They told me, they're like, hey, listen, you can either drive 53-foot trailer through North Philly or you can do it in Coatesville. I'm like, I'll take Coatesville. It's a lot smaller. So,
yeah, but bro, it looks like, I mean, when I was a kid growing up, it was like Mayberry. It really was. And last time we were there, man, it looked like downtown Baghdad. It was it was not a pleasant place.
No, it's trash. I mean, I always tell people it's like Coatesville is like taking a piece of North Philly, putting it out in the middle of a field, and that's what pretty much Coatesville is now. A lot of crime, a lot of drugs. Anyways, so where what was the question again? My origin story.
Yeah,
right?
Your origin. Where did you start? Yeah. I want to get into this eventually, but I want to kind of take it slow. Let's give a little background on you first.
Yeah. So Pennsylvania, live in Tennessee now. And I grew up in Kutztown, Pennsylvania. And I'm just gonna start rapping. You interject if you want to.
No, rock, lay it down, brother.
So growing up in Kutztown, Pennsylvania, I had a pretty rough life. I wasn't the most popular kid. I lived in a trailer park, a very large trailer park. But back in the early 90s, when we moved there, I think it was in 1990, actually, when we moved there, it was just trailer trash, trailer trash kids. And, kids were left to, police themselves. And it was a very large neighborhood and a bunch of cornfields everywhere, forests. So we could just disappear for a day and nobody'd know where we were. But that also led to just the bullying and stuff. And so I had a really rough childhood with the neighborhood kids and didn't really have a whole lot of places to retreat from. And so that kind of built up a lot of confidence issues for me. I went from Kutztown to a town called Hamburg. When I moved to Hamburg, I was in ninth grade. I just was going ninth grade. So I was new to high school, new to the school district. Everything was new. And I looked at it as a fresh start. But I had all that baggage. And so throughout all my high school years, I struggled with confidence in myself as well. I went to college, Bible college, and was studying to be in the ministry. Even though the jury's still out, this might be a little interesting, but the jury's still out because I'm not 100% convinced that I actually was a Christian when I was in Bible college. I had a radical transformational moment in my life. I think I was 27 when it happened. It was March 29th, 2014. Leading up to that moment, I do question sometimes the things that, my moments from the past, but I went to Bible college and I was studying and I wound up dropping out, got married to my wife. And very long story short, wound up driving tractor trailer. I tried a lot of different career paths, mechanic, and I always had this entrepreneurial spirit in the middle of all that. So I started many businesses. I started a company called Mars, which stood for Mobile Auto Repair Services. And I would go to people's houses and work on their cars for them. That way I was like, listen, I lived in Montgomery County. It was the richest county in Pennsylvania. A lot of people worked in the high rises in Philly and lived out there. They had money. And I was like, they don't want to go to a car garage on Saturday to get their oil changed. So I figured, why not just go to their house and do it for them and charge a convenience fee? And so that's what I was doing. But in the middle of the truck driving thing, I had this, it was a God moment. I was driving my truck down Germantown Pike into Philadelphia. And I don't even think I was praying. I was just living my life as an on-fire Christian. And I felt God speak to me. The Holy Spirit spoke to me and told me directly that I was going to start a podcast and that I was going to work alongside of a guy named Wes Germer from a podcast called Sasquatch Chronicles. And I had listened to Wes's show, but I had never talked to the guy. I wasn't friends with him. And I per custom, because during those times when God speaks to me, I would come home and tell my wife, I'm like, hey, this is what the Lord's telling me. And I would just tell her that just so that she would know and she could be my witness when it happens. Cause a lot of times it happened. I mean, sometimes you misread the room, but a lot of times, you feel God speaking to you and it would happen, at least for me. And so about a month later, I backed my trailer into the dock at work. It was about 8:30 at night. And I was getting ready to go home and my phone rings. It was Facebook Messenger, and Wes Germer from Sasquatch Chronicles is calling me on my Facebook Messenger app. And I'm like, what the heck? And so, because I mean, I had, listen, I was not interested in becoming a podcaster. I was a truck driver and I was good at it. And I enjoyed the driving, not so much in Philly, but I enjoyed the driving. And so I answered the phone thinking, okay, this is weird. You know, I had this feeling that God was speaking to me about a month prior. And for about 45 minutes, he is talking to me. And in our first conversation, he's like, you know, I think you'd be a good podcaster. And I was like, I already knew you were going to say that, bro. You know, and I didn't say that to him because I didn't want to scare him away. But I took it serious and I went home, told my wife, and we started the planning process of a podcast. And I came up with this idea, the confessionals, and doing paranormal conversation. And I didn't know exactly what the direction was going to be. To be honest with you, I was interested in the topic of Bigfoot, but ghosts, hauntings, UFOs, all that stuff, I never looked into, wasn't interested in. And so, but I didn't want to put a Bigfoot podcast, one, because I felt like I would have been copying Wes, but also because he told me, he said, do yourself a favor. If you're going to do this, he's like, come up with a name that's not specific topic, because I boxed myself in just doing Sasquatch Chronicles and I can't do anything else. And so I was like, okay, I'm going to do a bunch of stuff. And again, I think God placed Wes in my life for a specific purpose. And I don't think that purpose has totally served itself yet. And that was just a little piece of it. Like, Wes really helped me steer clear of boxing myself in the early days. And so I started the podcast. And I had a list of people that I wanted to talk to just in general, that I was like, okay, if I can do this podcast just a little bit, you know, see what happens. And I slapped together a logo off of Google Images. I just kind of took pieces and put it together. And I was like, okay, cool. And I started the podcast, and I had another friend in Massachusetts who had a podcast, and he wasn't real serious about it. He was just more like, you know, hobbyist. But he told me, he said, if you could do 8 weeks straight, an episode every week for 8 weeks straight, you're really onto something, and you're cooking. And that was a big deal back then to me. I was like, man, 8 weeks. I don't know if I can do 2 weeks, 8 weeks. Holy crap. So, but that was my benchmark. And I remember when I hit that eighth week and I did it, I was like, holy crap, I'm doing this. I'm a podcaster. It was a big victory for me. And here we are now. I just put out episode 563 this morning. And I've never missed a week. I've been doing this for almost 7 years now straight, never missing a week. And it's been conversations all over the board, from monsters in the woods to abductions to hauntings. And when you're talking about the paranormal, there's a real spiritual component to it. And and these people in this community, like I said earlier, I went to school for Bible college, but I don't know if exactly if I was, I know I wasn't walking with the Lord very closely, at least in Bible college, but now I am. And the people in the paranormal world, when I arrived in 2017, the very beginning of 2017, there wasn't a whole lot of Christians doing what I was doing. And at times I felt alone on an island. But I knew that God placed me there for a reason. And it's because the church has really done a great job of neglecting these people. They're very scared of people that have these kind of experiences. And I think it's because we've stripped the supernatural away from God. So when we view God, we think of God as three letters in a book, and an idea that we speak of once a week at church. And the reason why I think that the church has done that is because, well, there's many reasons. One, because it's led by people who don't actually believe it. They're just doing it because they fell into it, or they're doing it even worse for money. And that's the other thing. I think that there's a lot of churches that are out there, and I think a lot of churches start out with pure intentions, but they fall into this inevitable trap because of the way the system's set up, where they bite off more than they can chew. They start out as church plants, and I've seen this firsthand. I was involved in ministry at a church that did this. You start as a church plant, and you're meeting in a middle school. You're paying, I don't know, let's just say $1,000, $1,200 a month to rent that once a week. And your overhead's very little. You don't have an electric bill. You don't have landscaping. You don't have a janitor fees, including that $1,200. And you're growing. You hit 400. And all of a sudden, you're thinking about building a building. And then you go through with this building project. You build this building. And then it's you're in this new building and you're having more people coming here, seeing all these people, but now you're hiring staff, you're hiring pastors, you're hiring this, that, and the other. You have a daycare in there. You have a barista and you, all this overhead. And so you have to pay those bills. You have to pay for all that stuff. And you start, especially in liberal areas, you start looking around and you're like, I think I'm going to forego this message this week.
Right.
Because I don't think the butts are going to come back to the seats. And through that, the gospel gets watered down. But through that as well, the supernatural gets watered down. Because you listen, coming from, it's so interesting because you're talking to a guy who has been in Tennessee for a year now. I came from the Philadelphia area. I came from a very liberal city-oriented culture to a very rural, godly culture in the sense that it's conservative here. And I see how people think different in Pennsylvania and stuff. If a pastor's up there talking about some really woo woo supernatural stuff, like people are going to think he's off his rocker. It's because we stripped the supernatural out of the Bible. And go ahead.
Yeah, let me back you up a little bit, Tony, because I want to make sure we absolutely hit this part. You kind of touched on it, but you didn't necessarily talk about the transformation. You said at the time you went into this. I definitely want to cover everything you're going, but I want to just talk.
That's fine.
No. I want to definitely hit this part. You said you didn't know if you were a Christian at the time. What do you mean by that? You said, and is it any different now? Did you have a road to Damascus moment, so to speak?
I love sharing this. So thank you for bringing me back. I was raised in a house that claimed Christ. And nobody's perfect, you know, and my dad didn't get serious about his walk with Christ. And for him, that's his story to tell as far as how he views his spiritual walk throughout his life. But I remember in high school, my dad came home radically transformed overnight. Like literally he drove truck at night, tractor trailer driver, same company I left to be a podcaster. And he left angry one night, came home the next day, was completely silent. And I thought I was like, whoa, quiet. You're really mad. I was like, holy crap, this guy's going to lose it. Turns out that God spoke to him that night. And I don't know exactly what was said, but it changed him. And so I saw that, and that was in high school, and I kind of used, because the man is the spiritual leader of the household, the man is the leader of the household, the way the man goes, the household will follow. And so I followed, and my dad had this transformation. We started going to church. He started taking church serious. He started teaching a Sunday school class. He was on the board. He sang in worship, all this stuff. And so, like, I'm in the church culture now. I never really had this moment that I was like rock bottom. And I'm an extreme person. I think partly it's because of the ADHD, but I'm an extreme person. And I live my life extremely. And so for me, I know I needed a rock bottom moment. I needed a moment where I had no options. I needed Jesus. And for most of my adult life, I was just walking on the crutches of my spirit, my mom's and dad's spiritual crutches. Like, I was using them as spiritual crutches. I was a Christian because my parents were Christians. I acted and talked Christian when I was at church. I walk out the door and I was different. I was a different Tony. And I hated that about myself. And I would beat myself up about it. Every time I would sin, And I would have these moments of, you know, whatever, I would have this guilt because I'm trying to live this Christian life, but I never understood it, you know? So I went to Bible college because I was trying to make my parents happy. And I didn't know what to do with my life. I graduated high school in 2003 and, you know, it was go to college. You go to college to get a good job. Well, I didn't know what I wanted out of my life. And I didn't know, I wasn't a very good student. And so college didn't seem very attainable, but I was like, well, I could probably go to Bible college and pastors work one day a week. I can do that, you know? I did. I went to Bible college. I went for 4 years, failed a lot of classes, didn't take it serious because I don't want to say I wasn't called because I did feel a call. And that this is where the confusion comes in for me, because I felt God, I really did feel like God had a plan for my life. And I felt that a really unique pull towards evangelism. But even though I wasn't really walking this walk, I just was like, let me tell people. It's so weird. But so I dropped out of Bible college after 4 years. I got married to my wife. We were 21, and it was a good excuse to be able to drop out and just start working. And that's when I did that stuff. Throughout our 20s, we got married at 21. We had our first kid at 31. So we had 10 years, no kids. And we were very poor, struggled a lot. And that led to a lot of anger. And being, you know, the man of my house, my wife followed. And so when I stopped going to church, she stopped going to church. And my spiritual life, whatever that was non-existent, essentially. And it showed the way I talked to my wife, the way I treated my wife, the way I treated other people around me, the childhood issues that I had growing up with the lack of confidence was trying to overcompensate. And I became a very angry person, a violent person, not towards my wife, but just to people in general. I didn't want to be around people. I didn't want to know people. I hated everybody. And I got to a point where I was driving truck for Pitt, Ohio. And I remember one of the guys at work who's been a driver for a very long time. Looked at me, and he wasn't like a saint or anything. He wasn't even claiming Christ. I've heard him curse and all that stuff. But I remember him looking at me and he said something like, you know, you really got a mouth on you. You got some issues, man. Like the way I was talking, like I was crazy. I wanted to kill people. And it kind of made me self-reflect. And I was just thinking to myself, man, maybe I need to chill. You know, but it wasn't like a God thing, like, oh, I need to go to God and I need Jesus. I was just like, you know, if this dude's been driving for 30 years and he's telling me this, maybe I do need to chill. You know, I had a bit of a drinking issue where I would drink like a lot. And so, you know, I kind of chilled on that. I wanted to prove to myself that I wasn't an alcoholic. So I just stopped buying beer and stocking my fridge and I stopped drinking. And so I just don't stock beer in my house because I don't have. An extreme person doesn't have those breaks. Like, I don't know when to stop. But I remember I was like, you know, I just want to be a better person. I want to be a kinder person to people. So I was putting effort into changing my life and becoming a better person. And it didn't even cross my mind to do it with God. I didn't want to do it with God. That God was not the answer for me. And I kind of skipped a point here where I'm going to backtrack a little bit and just kind of magnify this a little bit just so people understand. For about 2 year period of my life, I was married and I was coaching, I was an assistant basketball coach at a D3 college, the same college I was going to. It was a Christian college and my wife was working there and, our marriage was next to nothing. I was purposely trying to, get her to divorce me because I was a coward. And I didn't have the guts to end it myself because I didn't want people thinking I was a bad guy. So I tried to create an environment at home where she didn't feel loved and so that she would call it quits because it wasn't working. For 2 years, I put her through hell. And one night I came home from my friend's house. It was probably like 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning. I had been drinking and we were in an apartment and she was awake. Waiting for me, and that wasn't my wife. Like she would go to bed early, just as out of character, and I knew something was up. And she sat me down at the table, and she had this like pages of notes, and she read me this like letter she wrote to me. And I remember a couple of things out of there that hit me. One, she said that she knows that I still love her because when I'm sleeping at night, I always roll over and put my arm around her. And that was news to me. And I was like, no, that's not true. You know, like I was like, I'm hard. And then the other one was, she said, if we get divorced, it's not because I divorced you, it's because you divorced me. And I was just like, dang, so she's not going anywhere. And maybe I misread the room on this one. And maybe I have a good wife here and I need to stop. I get my head out my butt and just man up. And so around that same time, my sister-in-law got pregnant. It was the first baby being born into the family. And something about that kind of clicked in my head too. I was just like, I want to be around for this kid to see this kid grow up, you know? And so the combination of those things and stuff, I started intentionally loving my wife. And it didn't take long for me to just fall back in love with her because it turns out I was actively resisting that love to begin with. And I say that because when I wanted to become a better person and I was trying to do it without God, I was at a point in my life where I loved my wife I more than I did the day I married her. I mean, it was like I was in love with this woman because of all the stuff that she sacrificed for me and put up with. And just I was like, the light bulb went on. I was like, holy crap, she like loves me. And I'd never had anybody love me like this. Like, Tony, you grew up like an outcast. Nobody cared about you. And here you have this beautiful woman and she cares about you. And you just trying to throw it away because you're scared. You're an idiot. And so I was deeply in love with my wife. And I was a truck driver driving alone, staring out a window all day long for 12 to 14 hours. And I was happy with that because I didn't want to be around people. I hated everybody except for my wife. And so my friend on March 29th, 2014 gets married. And that leading up to that week, leading up to the marriage, my wife's uncle passed away, and there was a funeral that Saturday. And I said to her, okay, well, I'll go to the wedding. You go to the funeral. Just meet me at the reception afterwards. Cause I was not trying to go to this church in a sorrowful manner, you know, cause it just wasn't my thing. And she didn't like that idea. So I went to the funeral and, I just told my friend we'll be at the reception afterwards. And I go to this funeral and I'm sitting in this church, and it was a very just generic service. And the person, you know, doing the service really didn't seem like they had any interest in the whole taking an opportunity to share the gospel thing. And Lindsay's other uncle is a Baptist pastor. He was there. And so during a period of the service where people could get up and share good thoughts about this person who passed away, he gets up and he says, well, since nobody else is doing it, he turns and looks at the person doing the service and he's like, I'll do it. And he shares the gospel. And I had heard the gospel a million times growing up, you know, and I was sitting there and I was like, man, you're embarrassing yourself. You're embarrassing me for whatever reason. You need to sit down and shut up. And I was getting extremely angry. My blood pressure was rising. My face was probably red. I was probably wrenching my fingers together. I was angry that this guy had the nerve to stand up and preach the gospel in a church. And I was mad, man. I was furious. I hated him. I hated him. And in that moment, for the first time in my life, God spoke to me. And I heard God say, it wasn't audible, but it was clear. It was like the Holy Spirit, God, this being that is on the outside of the universe that he created. He exists outside of time, zeroed in, came into this existence and zeroed in on me by myself and spoke to me. Spoke to my spirit. And I just heard, you don't need to change to come to me. Just come to me and I'll change you. and it wrecked me. It wrecked me. It wasn't her uncle's preaching, because while he was preaching, I wanted to kill him. I hated him. I hated God. And that's when God came and talked to me. And so I get emotional when I talk about this.
No, it's a powerful testimony, Tony. I mean, please do.
So I didn't lose it in the service. I didn't get on my knees crying. I didn't cry because I'm hard. I'm Tony. I'm hard. I'm tough. And I left that church. Couldn't wait to get in the car because I had no idea what just happened to me. None. I didn't even identify it as salvation at the moment. I was just like, what the heck? Like, I immediately was changed. Like, my language, I stopped cursing. I stopped hating people. I had this overflowing love for people immediately. And this isn't like that for everybody. I understand that. God, I think, reaches people on their own level, in their own way, the way that they need to be reached. And for me, because, again, I'm an extreme person, I needed an extreme change. And he took it all from me. That before I walked out of that church, I sat down in the car, and I'm so changed. I'm not talking a whole lot. And I'm so changed. My wife is sitting in the passenger seat, leaned up against the door, looking at me. And she's like, are you okay? And I was like, I'm good. I'm good. Like, I had no idea. And I drove to the reception that night where my friend was and my family was, because he was from the church that I grew up in. And it's kind of clicking what happened. And the pastor that I grew up with, he was there because it was his son getting married. And he sat down next to me and he's like, oh, it's good to see you. I haven't seen you in a while. And I was just like, oh yeah, it's good talking to you. Good seeing you. And I didn't know how to tell him what just happened to me. And I didn't tell him. He got up and walked away beforehand, probably because he didn't want the devil he heard that was on me. Because my parents probably told him everything, how crazy I was. And then after the reception, I was talking to my parents, and it was my mom, my dad, and my wife was there. I don't remember if my brother and sister were there at the moment, but I'm telling my dad face to face what happened, the story I just shared with you. And that's when I lost it. I started crying, and he hugs me. And my mom's crying, my wife's crying. And man, God, it's good, man.
Amen to all that, Tony. I'm not going to take you any further deeper into the weeds, but I will say you got me over here choked up because our lives kind of mirror one another more than you know. I won't get into any of that now. I just briefly covered it in the past. We're going to extraordinary testimony, and you have an uncanny, powerful way of conveying it to where I know a whole lot of people out there right now are being helped by it. So thank you so much for that. So let's move into another topic. I'd love to pick this up with you, perhaps even privately someday, if ever you and I ever get to hang out in the point where one of us doesn't have a broken down car. But in fact, not just you, but there's a number of other people that I know share that same sort of testimony. And what's astonishing to me is that we just didn't grow up in the same kind of area together, but there's a lot of your testimony that overlays with mine. And brother, I think you helped a lot of people out there, and I'm sure I'll get the emails to show it. Let's move into something else.
Yeah.
You're where, and I want to hit into something that you are uniquely capable of answering. But first I want to get into, so you're driving the truck.
Yeah.
You make this transformation. You got a podcast. And as I understand it, you're driving truck and doing the podcast at the same time. Mm-hmm. How did you make that transition from where, because you clearly have an uncanny talent of doing the podcasting. And it seems like you've been doing it forever and a day. How did you make that transition, and how long was it from going? Because there's a lot of people, I'm asking this question because I'm doing my dream job, and I have for some time. there's a lot of other people out there listening to this, and they write to me all the time saying, look, I'm into this desk job, or I'm an IT guy, or I do this, or I'm in construction, and I'm trying to make this transition from something that I'm not really, that I'm just basically, they pay me enough to keep me from quitting, and I do enough to keep from getting fired, and then they're wanting to make this transition. How did you do it?
Yeah, so I used to spend a lot of time, more time than I do now, because I am busy. I used to try to help people build podcasts as well. And the thing that I would tell people is that you need to figure out what you want out of it. You know, I had mentioned how I was an entrepreneur before I was a podcaster. I had had several businesses, failed at everything, but I had several businesses. And I think that God knew that I was kind of in a way uniquely qualified for this position that he's created for me, because I am an entrepreneur, but I also emphatically recognize the falls of the church when it comes to treating church like a business. And I never been the kind of person that has been infatuated with money or love money. Let's just put it, just take it up a notch and love money. I don't love money. So I'm an entrepreneur that is not never in love with money, never has been in love with money, gives money away when I don't have it. And so there's no, I think God knew that I would be different. I tell people you got to pursue it like a business. If you want to get out of this rat race you're in, and you want to do this podcasting thing for a living, from day one, you need to treat it like a business, not a hobbyist. Hobbyists do things in their spare time when they don't have a game to watch on TV, when they don't have something to go to on Saturday. I didn't do that. I didn't go to my own cousin's wedding because I had an interview, and that interview probably canceled. But I was bought into the process. And so I treated it like a business from day one, never knowing if it was ever going to turn into anything. I just knew that if it was going to turn into something, it's because I treated it serious. And so with no guarantees, I just moved forward, put blinders on, and tricked my brain for years into believing that success was right around the corner, that that one more episode and boom, success, like somehow it's going to happen. And so I just kept on grinding and grinding and grinding with these blinders on. And slowly the show started growing. And it's a lot because of my hard work in the first year of podcasting. I was reaching out to YouTube channels, podcasters, anybody who would give me a shout out, bring me on their show, do podcast swaps or little promo drops. You know, you do one, I do one kind of thing, anything. And I did that like really a ton. I would drive truck 12 to 14 hours a day. Start work at 6 o'clock in the morning, get done around 7-8 o'clock at night, drive 20-30 minutes home, kiss my wife, no kids, and go into our third bedroom and sit down in front of a computer, not knowing what I'm going to do that night, and just try. I didn't know. I mean, like people are like, yeah, you just sit down, you talk to people, you put the episode out. Like one, that's not the case for me. Like I do a lot of post-production. I wanted the product to sound extremely professional, and it didn't in the beginning. It sounded professional to me, but it wasn't what it is now. And it was just me being real with myself and just being honest and saying the product's not good enough yet. And I still feel that way. For the first year, I just kept on grinding like that. And it got to the point where we had kids, and it was Ben and Gemma. Gemma was just born. And I was doing the same routine. I mean, I don't know if this is a common characteristic for people, but I'm the kind of person that once I get in a routine and a groove, I'm like a freaking cyborg. Like I don't need to sleep. I just go. And that's the way it was for years for me. I would wake up at 6 o'clock in the morning, or I would get up earlier than six to get at work at six, work all day driving truck. And I wasn't just driving a truck. I was LTL. So I was pulling freight, 2000 pound skids to the back of the trailer for people to pick it off. Or sometimes I'd have a liftgate trailer, and that means, ooh, yay, I get to lower it down and pull it to wherever the customer wants it to be. And I was physically working hard too, exhausting myself, going home and doing this stuff until about 2-3 o'clock in the morning. I'd go to bed, get a few hours of sleep, get up, do the same thing. Didn't do any interviews during the week because as a truck driver, you don't know exactly when you're going to be done. So I would go to work all week. Saturdays, I would start my interviews about 10 o'clock in the morning, and I'd be interviewing till about 7-8 o'clock at night. I would do a bunch of interviews during the day because I was terrified that I wouldn't have an interview for 1 week. So I just built up about 70, 75 interviews of an archive that had never been aired. And I just was constantly interviewing people. And I did that on Saturdays, and on Sundays I would go to church in the morning. And then I had started a podcast called Hammer Lane Legends, where me and my dad would talk about trucking and have people on telling their crazy experiences from the road. And that would go till about 10 o'clock at night, the recordings and stuff. So from Monday to Sunday, it was just constant work, boom, boom, grind, grind, grind. And I didn't even, it didn't faze me because it was just what I did. I would joke and say I was a cyborg, but essentially I was. And then it was a Monday morning. My schedule had changed because I was making money podcasting now. And my wife was pregnant with my daughter, my daughter was born August of 2020. So the world's ending. And I'm just like, this is a great time to have a baby. Good job, Tony. Good job, man. I'm building a studio in my basement, which is, when I say studio, is 11 by 11 room. But I needed to have the third bedroom for my daughter. And my friends helped me build it. And during the whole COVID madness in the Philadelphia area, all over the world, I fully expected to see the members that I have cancel because nobody's working. Nobody can afford anything extra. And I was like, well, I'm going to build this studio and my show's over. and the opposite happened. Fortunately for us, we live in a culture where people don't have restrictions on their own selves. And so we're down there building a studio for a podcast that's supposed to be ending because nobody can afford memberships anymore. It turns out everybody's laid off and they have nothing to do, so they want extra content and they are paying for memberships. And I'm like, but you don't make money right now. Didn't matter.
So, yeah, COVID money.
Yeah, that's probably what it was. So I remember I had like 700 members. And when we first started the construction lasted about a month. And my memberships grew from about 700 to over 1,000. And I was like, holy crap, like what is going on? And my friend, he's like, dude, you need to quit driving truck and just do this full time. And I was like, no, I can't do this full time, man, because this is like this money that I'm making after you take out taxes, like I'm just making it financially then. And I don't want to leave my job for something that it could be risk. I have these kids that I got to take care of. And he's like, I'm telling you, go full time and it will grow. And I'm like, no. So I just kept on working and growing the podcast. And then I get to the point where I can take different runs. And so I was starting at 9 o'clock and I would drive from Pottstown where I lived to Phoenixville, get my truck, drive back to Pottstown where I drove my truck all day now because I didn't have to go too far because I was already making this podcast money. All I was doing was driving truck for the free healthcare. And so I was like, why would I want to bring on a $2,000 bill a month? Like these guys are paying me and they're giving me free healthcare. I have the easiest run in the terminal. It's super easy. I'm on my lunch break. I call my wife, tell her to bring the kids over and I can hang out with the family on my lunch break. Like it was so nice. There was days that I wouldn't even work 8 hours. The money I was making driving truck, it was like spending money. I was like, this is great. And then the one Monday morning I came downstairs to get some coffee It was probably about 8:30. I had to be at work at 9. And my son, who was just 3, he turned 3 in December. This was February of 2021. He runs over to me in his diaper and he's like, "Daddy, where are you going?" Because I was walking up the stairs with my coffee. And I said, "I got to go drive my truck today, buddy. I got to go to work." And he turned around and started crying, walking to his mom, saying that daddy doesn't want to spend time with him. And anybody who thinks that's a, how does a 3-year-old connect those dots? My son, I'm learning now through people who have told me this, that there's a chance that my son... I hate even saying this, but there's a chance my son might be a genius. So my pastor's daughter is a second grade teacher, and she volunteered to tell me that my son is levels above her second graders intellectually. My son's going to be going into kindergarten this coming school year. So everybody keeps telling me he's a genius, and I'm like, well, maybe we'll see. But he does that, and it hit me. I went to work that day. I cried a lot and talked to my wife about it. And by that Friday, but probably by the end of that Monday, but that Friday, I made a decision that the following Monday, I was going to put my 2 weeks in. I was going to quit driving truck. Cause I was like, I got to quit something. It's either podcasting or driving truck, and podcasting's paying more. And I can always go back to driving truck. And so I made that leap, and I honestly feel, well, by now I would have quit, but I wasn't in the position to mentally think about quitting until my son did that. And what really hit me was I was thinking at work about it in between tears. And I was like, you know, we just had this baby girl in August, and 3 years from now, she's going to be 3 years old like he is now. And she's going to be saying the same thing to me. And if I don't make a change now, Ben's just going to look at her and say, "I tried that." He's not going to change. Dad doesn't care. He just doesn't want to be around us. And, you know, growing up in a household with a truck driver who was gone a lot, I didn't want that, you know? And so fortunately, that's going to be coming up on 3 years now. In February of 2024, it'll be 3 years of me doing this stuff full time. My son, definitely my daughter, but my son that barely even remembers me driving truck. He would sit in the truck with me. I've given him rides. You would think he would remember some of that. He doesn't remember that. And so I'm like, that's cool. That's what I want. And I'm never going to go back to driving truck ever. When I moved to Tennessee, I dropped my CDL, and I'm so sold out to the idea of time over money that I would rather be living in a rundown trailer like I did as a kid, with holes in the floor and ceiling, possums crawling through our floor in the middle of the night, and be around my family, than chase the dollar again. And so I'm never doing it again. And if somebody ever, like, I always say this when I tell people this, if anybody thinks that that's lazy, look at my resume. I'm not lazy. I have perspective. I've been on both sides. I've been so poor that we sat around the kitchen table with a frozen bag of French fries to eat for dinner because my parents couldn't afford anything else and we were bare broke, to now where I was able to move my family on my own volition to Tennessee, buy a brand new house, and start homesteading, or trying to homestead, and work for myself. I've been on both sides. And I'm absolutely fine with both sides. What I'm not fine with is not seeing my kids again, or my wife. I am much more valuable being present with my children than in a truck trying to provide the next Xbox or PlayStation for my children. And so I would rather, and I mean that passionately, I would much rather be poor farming my half acre, whatever I have with my trailer, with my pigs in the back and chickens in the back and whatever else, and live like that, then drive truck again and not see my family. So that's how I'm hearing.
No, Tony, what I'm hearing on my end is basically I'm starting to think that we live in a, now this is definitely up your alley, I think we live in a parallel dimension, because your story is almost exactly parallel to mine. But what I hear and what I want to really put an exclamation point on is the fact that you didn't get to where you are. You didn't ascend to this position by just being a jellyfish and going along with it. What I heard from you is the same story of my own, is that you had to put in work, a lot of it, a lot more. And it's the kind of work that most people are just not going to understand, especially the ones that think I'm just going to go do my 9 to 5. Maybe I'll watch a game on the weekend. And now football goes, and football season pretty much goes on 7 days a week now, from, you know, Little League all the way up to the pros. You can find football any given time of the day. It's not just Sunday and Monday anymore. So it sounds like you took your spare time and you carved out your dream from it. And I think that's admirable, but my jaw is practically hitting the floor, because everything you're saying there is exactly the template I had to do, except you did it much earlier than I did. Now, let's kick on into the podcast, because there's some pretty important stuff that I want to – things that are unique to you. Now, I've been listening to shows like paranormal shows and all those things, Coast to Coast AM. I was listening to that before William was even born. And, you know, shows like it, you know, Ground Zero with Clyde Lewis. I've been listening to him since he's been around. And all the others that you can catch on terrestrial radio. And then when the podcast world came around, you know, I'd listen to these people. But until you came along, I can honestly remember the first episode I ever listened to. William sent it to me. And still to this day, it's one of the most riveting things I've ever heard in my life. And it was the guys in Pennsylvania that went after the treasure.
Yes.
Wow. That was the first one he ever sent to me. I listened to that. And I'm telling you, I listened to it again. And then when you rebroadcast it recently, I listened to it a third time, because in my heart, there's treasure ships all up and down the Missouri River. There's this Steamboat Arabia Museum that's right there in Kansas City, the Hawley family. I remember, I'll just briefly tell the story, that I was in college at the time, and at the same time was still a journeyman electrician working in Kansas City. And because everybody tells you got to go to college to be a success, I wasn't yet fully out of the matrix. So I was at the same time being a journeyman and at the same time going to college. Well, one of the courses was this History of Kansas City Museums. It was a blow-off kind of elective course. They take us into this museum, the Steamboat Arabia Museum, and there was a guy, I think his name was Greg Hawley. He's since died. There's all of us in there. He's given this presentation. And as we get done with this presentation, we're going out the door, and I definitely positioned myself to be the last one in line because I wanted to ask him a question, but you could tell he was waiting to make sure there were no stragglers. So I intended myself to get to the very back. And so when everybody shuffled on through, I got up there and I said, "Mr. Hawley, I got a question for you. You got all these." Now, I had already been through the bookshop and I knew the books that were in there, and they had like 8-digit Greek coordinates to all these wrecks that are up and down that river. And I said, "Mr. Hawley, I got to ask, how come you never went back after another one? You're telling me the cargo on this thing was worth almost $1 billion and it's like pewter and all that stuff. And you're telling me there's ships down there with pre-Civil War armaments that you know are worth $1 billion. How come you never been back?" Tony, he looked me dead in my eyes and he said, "I got a question for you, young man. How come you haven't been back?" And that was, it hit me like a ton of bricks. And then he, feeling like he just offended me, which he didn't, it just put me on my heels because I didn't expect it. He says, "I'll be honest with you. We haven't gone back because the state, basically, after we pulled this up, they came up with this law that basically they're going to steal 50% of whatever it gets. So it's basically turned off of treasure hunters." And I thought to myself, "Hold on, are you telling me this cargo's worth $1 billion? Okay, I might bellyache a little bit, but I think I can live with 500 million. So walked out of there, went on about my life, always in the back of my mind feeling like, man, I always want to go after this treasure. I want to go after one of these boats. I want to do this. I want to do that. And it's not even like, and then so I get and I listen to your podcast with that father and son team. Tony, as sure as I'm talking to you now, it took me back right to where Mr. Hawley was telling me, why haven't you done it? Okay, so there's conversations you and I need to have privately, maybe at some point. Sure. But that was the very first program I listened of yours. And then immediately I was hooked just for that. Then William sent me another one. this old boy that's looking at these wrecks. And I was like, this is absolutely captivating. And you being an extraordinary storyteller yourself and an uncanny ability to really get things out of people. I listened to that interview where this guy was basically sent out there with a detachment. You let this guy tell his story. There's not a whole lot of interruption. And I'm like, man, this guy's really good. But what really sold me onto your podcast, and I'm sorry to monologue for so long, but what really sold me on it was that you were the first person to ever cover this that I had listened to. And believe me, I listened to a lot of this stuff for a lot of years, but were not afraid to show your faith along the way. You were not, you were unapologetically a blood-bought soldier of Christ as I am. When I heard that from you and I heard you openly state it, I'm like, okay, why are more Christians absolutely unwilling? Most evangelicals I know will not even openly entertain the notion of what it is you're talking about. Things that are talked about by people like L.A. Marzulli that you've interviewed, people like Steve Quayle, people like a number of others out there that are largely marginalized in the evangelical community. But here I listen to you unapologetically talking about your faith and how the two can overlay. So, Tony, I want you to, if you're able, because I might be catching you flat-footed here, I want to know why more evangelicals are not at all interested into the paranormal, or what L.A. Marzulli calls the book of the guide of the supernatural. I can't remember the way he does it. I don't understand. This is more unbelievable than any Marvel comic I've ever heard in my life. I read Genesis 6. I read the book of Enoch. I read all these other apocryphal books that don't necessarily contradict, but they offer congruence. Because if you just read Genesis 6, you're like, okay, well, what do I do with this? And then when you read the book of Enoch, it opens it up wider. But I want to know from you, why is it more evangelicals just cannot even open the notion of the supernatural with the Bible and the things you talk about? Is there anything you could offer to maybe offer peace of confusion on this matter?
Yeah, I mean, I could probably go another 30 minutes now. So, so really, I mean, it's a heart issue. It's a fathomable issue. It's a grasping issue of how big God is, what God is, who God is. It's an ignorance issue, because there's a lot of people who are walking around as Christians who do not understand God at all. Like, you and I don't understand God. I don't want to understand all of God, because if I understand all of God, then he's not the God that I want to worship. Like, I don't want to be a finite being able to explain this supposedly omniscient God, like this God that is supposed to be so big that he created everything, including time, and I understand him. He's not worth worshiping if you completely understand him. But the lifelong pursuit of understanding your maker is something that should drive every Christian passionately in their heart. And so there's different levels of your salvation, which is why Paul talks about you have to constantly work out your salvation. There's that verse is just so deep for so many different reasons. But Romans 10:9, I believe, I always get it backwards. Maybe it's 9:10, but I think it's 10:9, is the foundation to every real Christian's faith.
Right. If thou shalt confess with thy mouth the Lord Jesus and shalt believe in his heart that God hath raised him from the dead, thou shalt be saved.
Right. It's a two-step process. Confess with your mouth, believe in your heart, and you will be saved. That is the foundation of the Christian faith. It's not, and then go and witness. It's not, and then, stop drinking. It's that. And that's why the man on the cross next to Christ was going to see Christ later that day in heaven, because Christ read his heart. And you can't trick the heart. And that's why I always come back to my salvation. It's like, was I a Christian? Because in my heart, was I a Christian? You know? But that said, there's a lot of people walking around not grasping that the God they worship, they're Romans 10:9. They're Christians, but they don't understand that the God that they're worshiping is supernatural. They don't understand that we are supernatural creatures and beings. We were made by a supernatural God. Before the fall of man, we lived in a different state of existence. People like growing up and stuff in the church, people will talk about, well, I wonder where the Garden of Eden is. Bro, you ain't going to find the Garden of Eden. You're not going to find the Garden of Eden. You're not going to walk through some untrailed path in Turkey and be like, oh, there's the Garden of Eden. Hey, there's the angel. It's not here in this dimension. It's not. And the fact is, before we were expelled out of the garden, we were much more spiritual beings than physical. That's why the physical was such a punishment. That's why he said, you're going to have to work the land. And ladies, guess what? It's going to hurt when you have childbearing, because you're now entering the physical world. You're going to have an expiration date. And we don't look at ourselves that way. We were all born inside of a prison cell, right? So we were born into this existence that we were given because of what happened in the past. That's why when the transformation happens, that's why when Christ happens, when the new earth is built, like all that stuff, there's such a spiritual component to it. I say all this just to say that we are supernatural beings. We live in a supernatural world made by a supernatural creator. And there are a lot of supernatural things that happen in this supernatural world that people that aren't Christians will perceive as paranormal, demonic, evil, or good. A lot of people think that a lot of the stuff that is demonic is good. And as Christians, we should have a different perspective, not a rebuttal, but a different perspective. And that perspective should be that when somebody that isn't a Christian says, hey, I saw a ghost and it looked like my uncle, it shouldn't be, that's impossible, because to be dead is to be present with the Lord. I forget the verse. We should ask questions, because as an individual, we should sit here as Christians, as an individual, sit here and say, how many people have to claim the same thing before we have to start looking at it and saying, what's going on here? You know? And then you were talking about the extra canonical books. There's a lot of information that's offered up in there that explains things, that gives perspective to why things are happening, how things have happened in the past, and what's going to happen in the future. That's why the Old Testament isn't talked a lot about in American churches, because it's weird. Like, it's just weird. How many pastors skip over Genesis 6:4, like you brought up? They skip over because it's, how do you explain it? And then how do you explain the fact that, okay, so that was pre-flood. Noah has the flood and everything happens. And then in Numbers 13:33, there's more. And that's not the only verse. I bring that up because that's what I used to always bring up. And it's just by default when I'm talking. But there are so many references of giants post-flood in the scriptures that Goliath was a Nephilim. He was a hybrid creature. He wasn't just a really tall person. And he had family members who were really tall, giant people. They were
King Og. King Og.
When you start reading through the Old Testament, I can't remember the books or anything where it's at, but like you see the patterns and you see that Goliath had relatives. And when you start counting the relatives and you start kind of putting things together, there's probably a really good argument to be made that when David walked onto that field and he went to that brook and picked up 5 smooth stones. I looked into this years ago, I think right around when I started the podcast, because somebody made a claim to me or around me that even, it might've been even in a sermon, that even King David lacked faith in God at times. And they used the example of the five smooth stones because he only had one giant to slay. And there was five smooth stones that he picked up. So clearly he didn't totally believe that God was going to allow him to slay the giant with one swing of that slingshot or whatever. And I'm like, that doesn't sound right to me totally. It just struck me weird. Like, I was like, maybe, but I don't know. And I looked into it. I'm like, okay, I got it. There's a really strong argument to be made that there were other giants present, Goliath's family members. And I believe in my heart that David walked onto that field and he's like, yo, bro, I'm going to take you out. And I'm fully expecting your four brothers or whoever it was to come out. And when they come out, you'll see them, just not here today. You'll see them on the other side because I'm going to take them out too. And I'm going to cut their heads off with your sword. You know, like I think he was a bad dude. I think David was a really bad man. When you look at the Old Testament, this is something that's not preached about in the Bible either, because it's not supposed to be real. It's easy to talk to kids about Samson because kids are into superheroes and it gets them their attention and it gets them interested in the Bible, which then hopefully we can share Jesus with one day and they can become Christians. It's not as easy for people who don't believe in a supernatural God and supernatural worldview to talk about Samson on a Sunday morning, let alone David's mighty men. Most pastors don't preach about David's mighty men because we're now talking about an entire army of Samsons, dudes that kill 1,000 people apiece in one shot, not over time, in one shot. They got an army of 1,000 men. I'm one dude and I'm going to take them all out. That's not real. That's not possible, according to people who do not have supernatural.
What about the chimeras that they were killing too, like the lion-like men and all these other things? It's glossed over in evangelicals. You can't even have a conversation with most of them about this stuff.
Yeah, you're right. When I first started my podcast, I had just kind of come out of my Bigfoot closet, and I was starting to talk about it with people in my everyday life. Like, nobody knew I was into these topics. I had a Facebook group called Pennsylvania Sasquatch Research. It still exists today. I don't run it. I think I'm still in it, but I don't run it. That was what I was doing. I was going on weekends. I would go up into the Appalachian Mountains and look for Bigfoot. Like, that's what I was doing, but nobody knew that. And I started the podcast. And I'm talking about this stuff. And I tell people at church, I'm starting a podcast. And they're like, what are you going to talk about? I'm like, Bigfoot. Paranormal stuff. And they're like, what? And I remember I was standing in church. And there was probably about three or four people I'm talking to. And we're talking about Bigfoot. And my explanation of how Bigfoot could exist, it has totally changed since then. But I remember I was standing there talking about this and how could it be possible that this creature could exist and we couldn't find it. And this snot-nosed kid who was probably about 19, 20 years old, he was going to the Christian college that I had dropped out of. He was leading worship that Sunday and they had got done practicing and he comes walking over. He sits down and we're talking and here's what we're talking about. And he interrupts me and he scoffs at me like a, and he looks at me and I'm like, I'm in my 30s. So like, I have like, I'm like, kid, don't talk to me this way. You know, like you don't know who I was before Jesus. You wouldn't have said that, you know, but he goes, wait, you actually believe in Bigfoot? And in the moment I said, yeah, I believe in Bigfoot. That's how I said it. And I just let it go. But what I wanted to say, but I just didn't have time and I didn't want to get into it. I would now today if it happened again. I wanted to say to him, son, we're in this middle school auditorium. We come every Sunday. We set up chairs. We set up tables. We set up a little table back here for donuts and crap. You go up on stage. You just got done being on stage, practicing worship that you're going to then lead an entire congregation of 400 people into worship. A God that you never laid eyes on, an invisible God that you worship. And the reason why you believe that God even exists is because you say you read about him in a book and you feel him in your heart. And you're saying, I'm crazy because there's people out there who say they laid their eyes on a creature that supposedly shouldn't exist in the woods. Don't tell me I'm crazy. You're crazy. I don't think you're crazy because I do the same thing. I believe in God too. But the fact is, if you just sit there and put things into perspective, all of a sudden your assumptions kind of get blown out of water. And I think that's the case for so many people in so many different topics of life, whether it's this stuff or other, is that we kind of just live our lives on default, and we change as human beings. And we like, I mean, I'm 37. I'm not the same guy I was 10 years ago. 10 years ago, I was just coming to know Christ. I've changed a lot, you know, but over the last 10 years, I've controlled that change in my life. I have done things very intentionally with my mind, but also with the direction of my life. And I controlled that change. But if I didn't do that, I still would have changed. I just would have been on default changing. I wouldn't have been controlling that change. It just would have happened, and I would have let the cards fall where they may. And that's what a lot of people do. So they come to these understandings and these assumptions about how the world operates off of default, based off of things that they've been taught growing up or the environment they were raised in. And that defines everything that they ever think could be real in this world. And if you stop doing that and you just start questioning things, but that's another thing, is that people are scared to question things, especially in the Christian world. They're scared to question. And then I just say, it's probably because your faith isn't strong enough that you're scared to question and look into your faith. Like, there's so many people who are scared to look into these things from a biblical perspective. And I think it's because they're scared that it's going to scare them away from God. Come on. If trying to pursue the real nature of your creator scares you away, then I hate to sound like a Calvinist, but were you ever a Christian to begin with? And I say that because I love Calvinists. In fact, I'm a hybrid theology wise. Like, I'm kind of Reformed. I'm also Pentecostal. Like, I'm just a mix, you know? But I mean, where are you really in your faith? And again, everything's timing. God knew where I was, knew where my heart was when he told me what I was going to be doing. Like I'm not scared to look into stuff. I was already looking into it, you know, and I've grown a lot. In fact, when I was just running that Facebook group, this was another moment before God even told me I was going to podcast. I was running that Facebook group, and I started seeing how people in that Facebook group would say that going out in the woods looking for Bigfoot is like a spiritual experience for them. And I started sitting here thinking, as a Christian who's on fire for God, I was as close to God as I ever been in my life, and all I wanted to do was get closer every day. I started thinking, I don't know if these are the people that I should be associating with. I don't know if I should be around these people. I literally was questioning what I tell people is they shouldn't be doing, right? And I was praying about it in my tractor trailer. I was probably driving down Germantown Pike again. Must be something about that road. But I remember praying about it and maybe even just thinking about it. But I felt the Holy Spirit tell me, I put you in this community to effect change for my name. That's all I heard. And I went home, told my wife, and I took it serious at that point. And I'm gonna kind of veer off just real quick here, just to because I you mentioned about people hearing this and being impacted. One thing with people listening, they're gonna say, "How do you hear God? Like, what do you mean you heard God?" Well, I heard as in, like, for me, I don't hear audibly. But the Holy Spirit speaks to my soul, my spirit. It's a spiritual connection that I feel, and it's like a code that's turned into words. And I didn't always know how to hear God until I was always having like these words come to me, like these in these moments, and I felt God speaking to me, but I was like, I don't know if that's God. And it's hard to act out on things that you feel God telling you to do when you don't truly 100% know that's God speaking to you. Because it takes a lot of faith, especially when it's things that make you uncomfortable to begin with. And I remember it was around Easter. It was the week leading up to Easter. And I felt God, I felt like I was supposed to be inviting my boss, my terminal manager, to my church. And I'm like, that could get real awkward if I did that and he said no, or whatever, you know? So I didn't invite him. for Easter because I was like, that's going to be too weird. And then the next week, I was talking to another driver who's a Christian, and he said, Jason, our terminal manager, he's like, yeah, Jason's looking for a church. Him and his family, they're looking for a church to attend. And I was like, holy crap. And I'm so glad. I'm so glad that I didn't invite him, because the purpose of all that wasn't for him to be invited to my church, because he found a church and he loved that church and he got involved in that church. The purpose of that whole thing was for God to show me, this is me when I'm talking to you. Mm-hmm. And the light bulb went on, and I was like, so when I have this happening, that is God speaking to me. And that is when everything changed for me, because I was able to now be like, okay, I know for a fact this is God speaking to me. And so whenever I felt what I now say God speaking to me, I act out on it. I would tell my wife, and it was kind of like almost like a parlor trick for me. I would go home to my wife and be like, hey, guess what? God told me that this is going to happen. And I just sit back and like, just wait now for it to happen. But so I kind of sidetracked there just to let people know kind of like my perspective there. That's how I know when God's speaking to me, because God put me in a situation where he was speaking to me. I didn't act. And then he confirmed that I was speaking to him, that he was speaking to me. So anyways, I forget where I was going. ADHD.
No, it's all good, man. No, you weave a tapestry in a very extraordinary way. And that's why you're so incredibly gifted at what you do, and why it's without a doubt when one of your episodes, you know, strangely enough, William and my wife, Michelle, are both subscribers to your members only. I'm the only one in this house that isn't. I think my daughter-in-law is too. So I gotta quit slipping, dude, because it's one of those things where every single episode where you say, okay, members only, I'm like, okay, yeah, as soon as I get done, do it. Cause I'm always working when I'm listening to it. And I'm like, as soon as I get in the house, I'm going to figure out what this members only thing is, because I'm something of a Luddite, and I'm going to go sign up, man. I've been saying that for 6 months. I'm going to get it done today. Tony, you're extraordinary at what you do. And frankly, it is a breath of fresh air to hear you do a program that, yeah, there's going to be some of those that may not be for the entire family. But by and large, nearly all of them are. They're thought provoking. They make me ask, you know, a mutual friend of ours, Joel Thomas of Kill the Mockingbirds. He's a frequent guest on there and also contributor to some extent from what you do. I've come to know Joel a little bit. We've had him on this show, and I'm like, man, every time I hear you guys, it's like I know that I'm at least hearing it from the perspective of somebody that I know I can relate to from where I stand with Christ. And we may not agree with one another on everything, and that's completely fine, and it shouldn't be any other way.
Right.
But it is a joy to know that you are out there. Tony, why don't you tell everybody, because I got to get rolling here in a minute, because there's some farm work out there I got to get done. But man, I don't want to end it, because I'm so riveted by what you're talking about. But we got to do this again whenever you're able to work some time out, and we got to get part two on this, because honestly, I'm not even a third of the way through some of the questions. Most of them have to do with the supernatural and a number of other things. But tell folks where they can get a hold of you. Because they really should get a hold of you.
Yeah. So, I appreciate you having me on. And I was excited when William asked me if I'd be on the show. I was like, heck yeah, absolutely. For me, it's, the Confessionals podcast is the show that's like the day job now. And I also have a media company that I'm starting to build out, and it's Merkle Media. We're now doing films where basically people come on my show, they tell an extraordinary experience, and some of those experiences we can go to those locations and see what's going on. And so we're doing those investigations kind of thing. And Joel is part of that process. And we're actually coming out with our second film next month on August 19th. It's going to be called The Shape of Shadows. It will be released on our website, theshapeofshadows.com. And it will be a film premiere, and there's gonna be we have a meeting here soon about what we're gonna be offering with that premiere outside of just the premiere itself. But people then will be able to go to that website and purchase it and watch it themselves. And eventually, it'll be on Amazon and Apple and Tubi and all that stuff. But I've worked really hard on building an audience, and so I unapologetically release things through me because I don't think Amazon and Apple should get the cut. That, you know, so like we release, self-release, and once the sales drop off and people in our audience have seen it for the most part, then we'll release to Amazon, to the bigger world and stuff. Yeah, so that's what we're doing. And if somebody has paranormal encounters, experiences, whether it's a Bigfoot encounter, a Dogman, we didn't even talk about Dogman. That's like the hot topic right now on my show. We talk about Dogman a lot, which is basically, well, it's a lot of things. So I could go deep on that, but just think werewolf, but not exactly, but sometimes. But we do, you know, these monsters in the woods. We do UFO abduction cases. We do, extreme hauntings. I'm an extreme person, so I really like the extreme nature of things. I don't want to say I like, but listen, it's an entertainment business as well, and so you know, some of these terrifying stories people share are some of the best episodes. Why? Because it's entertaining. And so we just do a lot of that kind of stuff, and I just sit down, and it's probably not even interviews, it's more of conversations. I just sit down with people, I talk with them, I accept them where they're at, and I don't let my own personal judgment and thoughts on a topic or their story infiltrate their story. I very much view what I do, it's not my job to make Billy believe Susie and her experience. My job is to present Susie to Billy and let Billy decide what he wants to believe and how he views these things, because everybody has these different life experiences and worldviews that they enter into this stuff with. I mean, I'm a Christian. I have a worldview that's different, way different than a Satanist. We both believe in supernatural, but we view it very differently. So if you put an atheist and a pastor in the same room, they have the same paranormal experience. They're going to walk out describing it very differently. And so I don't want to be caught up in being the arbiter of truth. I'm just a former truck driver turned podcaster that just loves Jesus. So I just let people share their stories, and it's your job to decide what you want to believe and what not. And I know, Billy, you would agree with this. We live in a world where the culture says what you believe. They don't want you thinking for yourself. They don't want you to question anything that they say. They just want you to take a hook, line, and sinker. And I am vehemently against that. And I pursue my show in a very different way, where I'm like, listen, I don't care if you believe it or not. This is the story for the week. Listen to it and you decide. And so that's how I approach the show. If anybody listening wants to check it out, they can find it on any podcast playing app. We upload to YouTube when we get around to it. Everything is Audible, audio on, you know, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. The show's called The Confessionals. Theconfessionals.com is the confessionalspodcast.com is the website. And if you have something you want to reach out to me about and share on the show, our email address is contact@theconfessionalspodcast.com.
All right. Well, folks, I want to thank everybody out there for checking this out. I told you it was going to be a good one. So until next time, y'all, stay alert, stay alive.
Maybe I'm forgotten at the bottom where it's hollow. My golems wanna follow roads that go below Agartha. They want me to chase my sins, but I'm not here to stay with them. Keep a hollow chain, but I don't got a